This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable and fixed blade knives and game processing kits. Now, in my bag this year, I had the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit. It comes in a very compact, handy carrying case, and one handle has the replaceable blade knife and the gutting blade. The other handle has the saw that comes with it. So I use the saw to split the pelvis, and I use the gut hook to open up the cavity and the blade to start cutting all the stuff out, right? So it makes cleaning a deer very simple, very easy, and the knife is sharp. And if you've ever had to gut a deer with a dull knife, we all know how much that sucks. So take a look at the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit and head on over to OutdoorEdge.com and enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% savings on your purchase.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith
and Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
All right, I'm sitting here. I'm at home tonight. Matt is once again on the road. It's been a very busy couple of weeks for us. We've been Iowa. You were in Kansas. I'll be in Oklahoma, and now you're in Ohio.
Ohio and West Virginia. Yep. So it's going to be.
I'm trying to remember. Are you a new client in West Virginia or retainer client?
So revisiting a couple clients from previous work in Ohio, and a revisit in West Virginia, and then on to Ohio later in the week for a new client.
Gotcha.
A little mixed bag.
Yeah. And I'm a new client that. I feel bad for him. We've been, it's one of those where it's third time's the charm this week. First time, COVID positive test on his end. And the second time was that brutally cold, lots of snow, week that we had. So we had to cancel again. So going to make it happen this week.
Yeah. Weather looks good out here and for you back home and then in Oklahoma. So. We'll have a lot of boots on the ground covering a lot of acres, seeing a lot of cool stuff, which is always fun to be able to, you know, post on social media and follow up with people saying, hey, you know, these are the guys that are out there taking recommendations and putting them into place. And here's what they're seeing. Here's what is happening on their property. So they're no different from anyone listening to this podcast right now. And, you know, just hopefully it's fuel for everyone getting out there and working hard. Wanting to see improvement and be the best land steward they can.
Yep, for sure. Before we jump into this podcast, we will remind you guys that one of our partners that help make this podcast happen each and every week is Stratton Seed. You can check them out at GoStrattonSeed.com, or you can order online at ShopLandLegacy.com. For everything with all the food plots that are going to be planted this spring, it's already time to start thinking about that with the Ancestry Blend, Heritage Blend, Game Changer 1.0s, Game Changer 2.0s, Wild Wings. I think I pretty well covered
it. Bonafide,
or if you're frost seeding right now with Revival or Emerge Blend. So a lot of stuff to order. And good news, a lot of orders. In the past couple of years with Stratton, ever since they got in the food plot game, we've been a little bit later into the winter and even the spring before we started shipping. But we're actually going to be shipping out Heritage, Soybean, Ancestry, pretty much all the spring blends here in the next week or two. So if you have orders and you're wanting to make that happen, and have the seed on hand, look it up at shoplandandlegacy.com. I'll have everything updated hopefully this week, and maybe by the time this podcast drops, you will hear or you can jump over on that site and find the stuff that you would like to plant this year. I will remind you guys, you know, some people ordered way back when, even in December. The way seed works, I've said this on a podcast, I think, last year, and I'll say it again, but, like, it doesn't just get harvested and immediately go in a bag and sit on the shelf. There's a lot of processing things that happen, and so, like, right now, bags are arriving with new print on them at Stratton headquarters, and they're starting to mix and source all of the seed and get it all mixed together and then bagged up. So it is a process. So if you ordered something in December, it's getting ready to ship. So it's not just that, oh, hey, we forgot to send it. It takes a little bit of time. But if you guys are interested in that seed, go check it out at Shopland and Legacy. And that's where you'll find the Stratton seed.
Also on the shipping for 2021, it's shipping during 2021. So I think everyone can expect potential longer time frames. That's out of everyone's hands at Stratton and certainly Land of Legacy. It's total third-party stuff. So,
and I will say, so for you guys that don't know how it works, we don't have the seed. We're a very small company, but it's not like Matt and I are out in our garage bagging this stuff up and sending it out. Stratton handles all of it, and you order through us, and then they drop ship it from their warehouse. But it is a multi-step process, and when you do order from our site, there's two transactions that occur. There's the initial purchase transaction, and then there's the follow-up invoice for the shipping. Due to seed size, you're ordering 50-pound bags or 41-pound bags. There is of such a variance in shipping cost that we can't include that in the upfront purchase, because I would ask you to compare pricing, because soybeans, the Roundup Ready forage soybeans, are much more affordable than a lot of the other ones on the market. So because of that, we have to do a second invoicing for shipping. And so it's not order your seed and wait for it to show up. You need to be expecting for a second email to come in with a quote for the shipping price. And if you don't like the price, it's too high, we can completely refund you. But there, it is not just once and done. And so please be patient with us. We're trying to get you the best pricing we can. And so it takes a little bit. It might take a little bit longer than what you might expect from an Amazon purchase.
Yeah, no doubt.
I swipe it, quick buy, swipe it, see you in 2 days. No, it's not that. And so, but we do appreciate all you guys. Man, there's been a pile of orders already came through the site. I know my wife's loving it because she's handling a lot of them right now. And I don't know if anybody really knows that, but if you order on the site, you typically get contacted by her or talk to her. So we are very pretty skinny over here at this business. It's pretty lean and mean. You're going to deal with either me, Matt, or somebody in our family, most likely.
That's right.
So anyway, with all that being said, spring food plots are coming up. So one other thing, I've been meaning to say this. I don't know. I know a lot of our listeners are NWTF, National Wild Turkey Federation followers. So if they got the magazine, they saw an article with me in it, a former scholarship. I forgot what they called the whole article, but former scholarship winner, kind of checking in, seeing. They misquoted me. And so in case anybody read that and said, that sounds strange, I do want to emphasize that they just misquoted me. Basically, the quote was that a lot of people blah, blah, blah when it comes to land management, but we believe that leave the land as you found it, which is not what we say. We want to leave it better than we found it. So in case you read that and you thought, well, that's a weird philosophy, that's why.
Better is what we're shooting for.
I mean, if I had the mindset of leave it like you found it, yikes, there'd be a lot of terrible landscapes out there.
Yeah.
So,
unfortunately, that's a pretty common philosophy for a lot of people. That's why we're in the shape we are, and I'm headed to cross actually the Ohio right now, Ohio River, to be working on habitat because someone didn't leave it better than what it should have been.
Yeah. I think what they misquoted was the fact that I was talking about preservation versus conservation, and I think that's where the mishap happened. But
sure.
In case they heard it or read it and thought, huh, that doesn't match up with what he says on the podcast, that's why. There was one other thing I was going to mention here, but I totally forgot what it was. But we're going to be jumping into another series over the next few weeks, probably month or longer, that's very timely. And obviously, if this is not your thing, there are two podcasts a week, so there'll be plenty of other information over on the second podcast over the same time frame. But we're going to jump into wild turkeys.
I mean, I'm extremely excited for talking about wild turkeys. I absolutely love wild turkeys. I think a lot of people may not know that, gosh, if we had one species to be able to hunt for the rest of our lives, we'd both be choosing hunting wild turkeys.
You back up. Chad,
you changed your mind?
Chad called me the other day, and he listened to another podcast. In the last 2 years, I've changed to say that I would choose the first week of November, and it's for the one simple thing of once kids became into my life, it seemed like November has been more enjoyable than April for me. From a standpoint of like,
because you can hunt the afternoons.
Because I can hunt the afternoons, yeah, or the mornings. I can pick. And frankly, it seems like turkey season has gotten where the ticks have been kind of bad, and I don't have to worry about those in November and other bugs. So I'm like, you know, as much as I love turkey hunting, like for a long time in my life, I've said that's my favorite season. That's what I would do if that was the only thing I could hunt. I have changed in the last 2 years to say that I would choose deer in first part of November, but that doesn't mean I don't. Well, I'll say donuts might have had something to do with that too, Matt. Whenever a deer like that showed up, it was like, oh wow, this I can kind of see the pursuit of a giant deer. That's a lot of fun, but turkeys is definitely one of those things that you know. I had a conversation with a client just yesterday. The guy had just been getting into deer hunting the last few years. And his kids weren't really into hunting a whole lot yet, and he was going to try to introduce them to hunting through turkey hunting. And I said, there's not really a better sport or a better hunting season out there than turkey hunting to introduce new hunters.
Yep. So, I think that there's so many different varied elements, styles to be able to turkey hunt, the interaction, the coming out of winter and just that spring green up is a fantastic time to be able to be outside in God's creation. And I think for me, it really does touch on all those different points of hunting and just being outside and loving nature. And that's why it's just so high on my list. But at the same time, I almost feel like turkeys have gotten like pushed a little bit to the wayside and almost thrown into this category of, oh, I've got turkeys, I may always have them. But, you know, quick history of an organization like National Wild Turkey Federation, what they have done, the conservation group, you quickly realize that, my gosh, the current state of turkeys wasn't always so. I mean, they were near extinction, and just to see this story of the reintroduction to a lot of areas and seeing conservation dollars get put to work, seeing hard work occur and seeing that rebound is
yep.
really awesome. And I think that that story, one, it's timeless, but then two, it's a success story because of the management practices based on science, and that science is continuing to evolve. And that's honestly, Adam, where I think we come in as we look at the science and try and break it down and digest it into ways that we could share that with landowners and podcast listeners to
yep.
make sure that everyone is doing their part to be, let's say, a part of that history of the turkeys and not see, let's just say, this now potentially downward trend in turkey populations, but can see a whether a stable or a climbing population in your respective area. We kind of put that on our shoulders and say we want to be able to bring that information. So that's the reason behind doing a whole series on turkeys is let's digest all this new information as hunters that we have access to and landowners and see what the heck we could do for turkeys, because there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Absolutely. And, you know, this will be a podcast in the future, but really talking about the practices that we should be utilizing now versus what we've been told over the last 20 years from the hunting community on what land management really looked like. But I think there's a lot of practices or a lot of terminology with turkeys that seems to be relatively new for landowners and turkey hunters in general, such as brood rearing habitat and nesting habitat and old field and various forms of habitat features that are highly productive for turkeys, when, you know, frankly, in the past, I think a lot of people thought, well, hunt cattle farms, hunt dairy farms, plant chufa, and you might do a little bit of burning and your turkey should be all right. And that's far from right. The truth. And so we're going to cover everything that we can over the course of however long until we watch the downloads plummet and say, okay, people are tired of hearing turkey talk. But we're going to cover the science side of it and things that as a landowner, what we can be doing now and into the growing season, into spring green up and throughout the rest of the year, that can ensure that at least we're doing our part to help turkeys on the habitat side from various forms, whether it be from a nesting hen to a poult to an adult tom. And then we're going to cover kind of strategies with that, how to utilize those habitat features specifically for turkeys and how that can also benefit our deer. And then we're probably going to talk hunting strategy, and then that will lead right into hunting success. And I say that
we're going to have several guests, and Kyle and Frank will be chiming in. Their knowledge of wild turkeys is very, very extensive, as you guys probably can go back and listen to other podcasts that they've been on. But the ones here in the future on this wild turkey series, you guys will hear them discuss in great detail diets, life cycles, life history traits of the wild turkey that are very imperative to knowing or that the next steps into habitat management, why we need these features on the landscape. So there's so much interesting information about wild turkey, comparatively speaking, to deer. Both are unique, both are cool, but there's a lot of interesting, let's say, factoids that I think will blow some people's mind when they really get down to the nitty-gritty of, man, that's the turkey that I'm hearing out there gobbling 50 yards in front of me and strutting, closing the distance, when you really know the science behind what allows that turkey to be there in front of you. It's just fascinating.
Yes, for sure. And I think we get that question a lot with clients, is like, I want to be doing, it's not like the things we do for deer is drastically different than the things we would do for turkeys, but there are some little conformities that you could do that would make it to where if you really knew what you were looking for, you could look at a property and be like, okay, this one's clearly set up for more of a turkey hunting, turkey producing farm rather than being a deer hunting specific property.
Sure.
But they're not that far off. So for the deer hunters who are like, I'm not a turkey hunter, don't turn it off just yet, because I think – like I've said this before, and I'll reiterate it with turkeys, but you can have a very a highly productive deer farm and not have a single quail and not do a single thing for quail, as well as turkeys for the most part. It's kind of turkey sets in between the quail and the deer, but you can't have a highly productive quail farm or landscape and not have deer doing really well. Deer are going to do really well with with a quail landscape, a landscape that's managed for quail. But you can't have, you can have a property that's managed specifically for deer and not be doing anything that's beneficial for the quail. And so you could say the same thing about turkeys. If you really focus on managing for turkeys and healthy turkeys, your deer are going to do really well. But you could manage, if you manage just for deer, you're, there's things that you were doing that wouldn't affect the turkeys at all, and honestly be a little bit negative for them if you did some stuff that we've seen out there in the social media world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think that, again, just being well-rounded and well-versed with why you do some techniques or why you change up this interval of whether it's timber harvest or fire or herbicide means, you know, then you really take that fine tune and tweak it towards turkeys. But that overlap for deer is so great that, you know, I don't see or hear of a ton of deer hunters really complaining about having turkeys to chase during spring. You know, it's not generally one of those, oh gosh, I just got so many turkeys. You know, usually it's like, oh my gosh, another opportunity to get outside, or another opportunity to, if you're a landowner, to be able to lease from a hunting operation. There's just so many additional benefits to having robust turkey numbers. And I think that with such varied numbers across the landscape, there's some areas of the country right now that are having or experiencing boom in their turkey populations. Think of a lot of things like the Pacific Northwest, or there's areas in Canada that are having lots of turkeys and seeing that population increase. But then there's also places across the country, the Southeast, Mississippi, Georgia, South Carolina, Kansas, Nebraska, where literally seasons bag limits are decreasing because turkey numbers are hurting. And mm-hmm. So we need to keep all of that in mind when we're talking about turkeys and turkey numbers. But regardless of where you fall on that spectrum, it's not going to hurt to hear how to manage turkeys, because you may find yourself, unfortunately, maybe on the decrease side at some point or another. But regardless, it's fun to be able to learn the details about turkey numbers and about turkey traits and what makes turkeys do what they do. You know, mm-hmm. They have just extremely cool behaviors throughout many different portions of the year, whether it's, you know, from brooding young birds to strutting, gobbling, their reproduction, as well as flocking birds in the fall. I mean, I get so much enjoyment just hearing birds on the roost in the fall, talking and working through woodlot, scratching. Like, it's fun. It's cool.
That's so right.
Hopefully everyone else will get some more information about them and just kind of adopt that same type of, I'll say, admiration that we may share for turkeys, but they can experience that same enjoyment.
Yeah, for sure. Because I think, you know, if we're describing an ideal farm for us, depending on where it's at in the world, so let's just say here at our home ground, what I would say is it's got a healthy population of white-tailed deer, healthy population of wild turkeys. It's working towards, or hopefully within 5 to 10 years, a healthy population of bobwhite quail, and, you know, and all the other non-game species are abundant as well. There's a lot of pollinators. There's a lot of birds, songbirds. There's a lot of insects that just aren't classed in the pollinator world. There's a healthy population of cottontail rabbits. I would love to see the riparian areas or creeks have lots of beavers. Therefore, because of the beavers being a keystone species, there's a lot of different, waterfowl that migrate through, and then just a whole plethora of other birds or animals that we didn't even mention. That's in an ideal world. That's what you're building. And if you have that, you know that, if as long as you're staying on top of your herd management, that the deer are thriving, and there should be some doggone big bucks around. And if I'm in the northern climate, I'm not only just managing for deer, but I'm trying to manage for turkeys, and I'm trying to do my part to help the ruffed grouse as well. And so I think that as deer hunters, we've really, really missed the boat and struggle to fall into the idea that there's these certain practices that we should do, but stepping back and looking at them from a big picture standpoint, it's really not a drop in the bucket when it comes to improving the land. And I think that's where we've really got to get better about looking at land management from the standpoint of removing the product endorsements and sponsorships and going, okay, what is the point of this? Like, what is my biggest bang for the buck? What is actually creating a landscape that's healthy that when I do leave or hand this down, I don't really have to sweat that the wildlife are going to flourish because I've done the work.
Yeah. That has a ton of value added, whether it's just a lifetime of living on the land or, you know, with the land, but it is that responsibility that we have. And I think that responsibility first and foremost starts with getting quality information. And I think that I'm not trying to pat ourselves on the back, but when we focus on sources of research and the most up-to-date research that we can get our hands on and then disseminate that out, that's the best that we know. And that's like the latest, greatest, most important information from someone who it calls himself a conservationist, who wants to be a land manager, has to grasp and hold on to for dear life, because the money that goes in to that research, you know, hopefully that output is valuable, real, practical experiences and recommendations that then we put on the landscape. We take that information, change it, transform property to improve what we found in research to not be productive. And so that's where our heart is. That's where this information you guys are going to hear in the next couple of weeks is derived from. It's from research. It's from scientists. And sure, there's going to be obviously our own personal observations, but the base and the facts and the numbers all come from that and stem from that. And, you know, hopefully take, let's say, some refuge in the fact that this is as good as the information can be, that's going to get me the results on my land that I'm looking for, not it was a $20 tool that I thought would change the how well turkeys reproduce, or I'm going to make turkey nest sites because I can make buck beds kind of thing. It's not like that sort of information. It's very, very scientific based. And again, yeah, we're not trying to be nerds, but we want to make it as just impactful as possible, because there's really not much more frustrating than going out. Adam, I don't know how many tanks of fuel that were cut this week when it came to chainsaws, but imagine if all the sweat equity and hard work we had that we did, what if that was put into a practice that was not the right practice for that piece of property, that acre of property, or those, let's say, acres that we impacted? Like, what if we were doing something that was just spinning our wheels? That would be so frustrating to do that. And that's, again, why we just rely heavily on that quality information to make sure that what we do, the time we spend, is impactful.
For sure. For sure. We've used that analogy before that, you know, we were talking about predators, but there's a lot of practices out there that could fill the gap of the predators in that analogy. Is like, how many times do you go out and take a tree, an invasive tree, and just cut it down, knowing that we're going to require herbicide to kill it, but you're just like, I'll just cut it down. How many times do you do that? Probably not very often. And there's a lot of practices out there, especially in, well, I almost said especially with turkeys, but everything, deer probably more than anything, because that's where most people are focused at first and foremost, which is fine, but they're choosing practices that are just spinning wheels, wasting money, wasting time, and 5 years from now you're going to look back and say, that's a lot of time wasted.
Yeah, I mean, and the last thing we would want to have you experience as a listener is
to be doing and implementing these practices, maybe not to the degree that that they need to be done, and then still experiencing, let's say, a decrease in the population. My gosh, that would be tough. And yes, these birds, these populations that we're talking about, they're not a property specific animal. They're a landscape animal. So that fall rests solely on your shoulders. But at the same time, when you have good, clear information, that means that then you can communicate that to the people who are around you, let's say your neighbors, and then create that neighborhood effect of just solid habitat.
So, again, it all
has to start with good, solid information. So that's what we're going to pack this series with, and I'm excited to talk about it and bring on some people who have more experience with it than us, but just have these awesome conversations about the amazing wild turkey.
Oh, what I was going to say that I forgot about at the beginning was be sure to go to our YouTube channel. We've been delayed at getting some videos out there on it over the last few weeks for the simple fact that we've been traveling so much. It's very difficult with our travel schedules to go to our farms, which are an hour or some away, shoot videos, and then have the time to send them in, send them to our producer, get them all produced, then post them in the meantime while writing reports and doing plans and traveling. So we apologize for that, but we do have two turkey hunts coming to you guys this month because it is March when these podcasts drop. That one of them, well, they're both good hunts, but one of them is just unbelievable. And so that's going to be over on our YouTube channel. Just search Land and Legacy. Subscribe. Be sure to hit the little bell sign to, you know, Matt, I think every time I say that, I think of that podcast you and I listen to. It's like, be sure to click that little bell. You know what I'm talking about?
No,
Unashamed podcast. When he says go when you're on YouTube, be sure to hit subscribe and click that little bell so you can be notified every time we post. So yeah, click that little bell so you can be notified every time we post a new video. There's going to be several this spring, and we're hopeful that you guys will follow along. But and just remember that yeah, we might call a lot, but we kill a lot of birds. I had to say that. Yeah.
That's been a common comment
on some of our videos. We call too much. Well, we're killing turkeys.
I just like to hear them gobble back.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't think you wanted to see 10 minutes of stale air. I thought you wanted to hear turkeys gobbling. So.
That's right.
Anyway, so. I hope people are gonna listen to this series. We're gonna have some turkey biologists on, some research head people, and then we're gonna put that through layman's terms and how you can utilize it on your farm. So,
yep.
Anyway,
sure. I look forward to it.
Yeah, I'm excited, Matt. Be safe in your travels, guys. Thanks again for listening. I haven't plugged any kind of any requests for. Reviews over on iTunes. So guys, please search Land and Legacy on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. That would be great. Help support us. And continued support from you guys has been phenomenal, and we can't thank you enough. So we'll see you here next week.
See you guys.
Yep.